This is CliffCentral.com.
Let's get into some news on the markets and everything else to do with your money this morning with Anthea Gardner. Here's everything you need to know. It's time.
She looks hard for the money. So hard for it, honey. She looks hard for the money, so you better print her right.
That's right, the only asset manager in the whole world who has her own theme music. There she is, Anthea. Good morning.
Good morning, Gary.
How are you today? What's happening?
Yes, I'm well. The markets were not great on Friday. Well, our market was not great on Friday.
I
mean, the US was good and Asia's up this morning, but we suffered a bit. You know, there's a lot of concern about this Deutsche Bank story. It's just not going away.
All right, just give me the whole thing again in case people haven't been paying attention. What's going on with Deutsche Bank?
So the concern is that, first of all, they got this huge fine. It was $14 billion, I think.
What for? Irregular?
For the credit book that they had that they said they'd sold and done badly with it. You know, this same story as 2008, 2009. So yeah. Mortgage-backed securities book assets that they'd sold off, basically.
All right.
And then, of course, the concern is as the share falls, the bank is not capitalized enough and people are worrying that they don't have enough money. Although over the weekend, Deutsche did say that the fine was going to be lower and also that they were cutting 1,000 jobs. But this is the fallout from it. They're continuously cutting jobs and trying to trim and not kind of contain the expenses, basically.
I was under the impression that this was a very solid bank, that it was dependable, that it was well-run.
Too big to fail?
No, well, not too big to just well run. That it was one of those banks that was operated properly. You know, they had all their fundamentals in place. They didn't make dangerous bets. They didn't do stupid things.
But all banks are so dependent on each other. And in 2008, when this all fell apart, I was actually working at Morgan Stanley, and you would have thought that would be a strong, solid, we don't take too much risk kind of bank.
Right.
But Morgan Stanley also almost went under. And what happens? Well, because they had so much credit to Lehman, and within the banks they all kind of lend money to each other. If one falls down, you can imagine it's just a house of cards or a domino effect, really.
Yo.
And that's the worry about it. And so in 2008, the stimming up of the banks system definitely was needed, because if they hadn't, for sure one of the other big banks would have gone under. And so now people are saying, well, why didn't we let them fail? And of course, if Deutsche are looking a bit worrying, then people are, like Angela Merkel said last week, she's actually not going to cough up for Deutsche Bank and their foil. So we'll see what happens. Yeah, I'd like to think that that Deutsche is not the next Lehman's, but wait and see, I think, again. Or the market, you know. And so this kind of played a bit on our market on Friday. Our bank suffered. But we had huge trade on Friday, over $2 billion traded, which was very weird, because it was the first time that SAB Miller wasn't trading. And in fact, the JSE said on Friday that Thursday was the biggest trading day they'd ever had of $4.6 billion. And that's because SAB Miller fell out, and then we had to rebalance the index. All the index tracking funds had to rebalance and kind of buy shares in other companies that they had previously been invested in SAB Miller, which they'll be getting cash for. So it's quite a bizarre little day. And then gold rallied on Friday, also on this nervousness. And then oil had a spike, but that's because OPEC eventually decided that they were going to cut production. You know, they were meeting in Algeria last week. And that they were actually going to make allowances for Iran. So Brent crude traded over $50 a barrel on Friday.
I have an idea, by the way, about all these meetings, whether it's that one they have in Jackson Hole or whether it's OPEC's meeting. They must have them in the worst possible places where there isn't any food or water, and they must be able to do them quickly, and they must be able to weather the nasty, horrible place that they go to, and we'll have much better decisions.
So these no people, Davos then?
No, because they go there and it's all luxurious and they all sit around and they drink, I don't know, what do they drink in the, what do they do in the Alps? Schnapps or?
Yeah.
Yeah. I think it's too cushy. This is also why these leaders sit there and yak for hours and hours.
Do you think they'll come to a decision much quicker?
Put them in the middle of Sahara in a tent. Let's see how quickly they get things decided. I'm telling you, it'll be fast.
Maybe they'll just all send their proxy votes in.
Yeah. Probably. Even better, then we just get on with it.
Yeah, done. So the Rand traded through 14 on Friday. So really, kind of, we were expecting this. To think that it started the week at 13, what was it, 40? Yeah, so huge jump. It did then pull back a little bit to $13.75. And this volatility in the Rand on Friday was because of two economic things. Mm-hmm. The first thing, and why it weakened, was that the August trade account number came out at a deficit of 8.6 billion Rand. We were expecting a surplus of 1.6 billion Rand. So that's huge. And then also in July, there was a surplus of 5. So to go from 5 to minus 5.6 billion Rand, you know, that's not great. I mean, on average, cumulatively, I should say, we still are looking for a surplus of about 7 billion this year. Hmm. And that's because we've seen exports grow quite nicely by about 9%, whereas imports have declined and the growth there is not even 3% yet. And I think, it's funny to say this, but the fact that the economy is not growing means that people are not importing things, people are not buying, and so we're not spending money offshore. You know, it's kind of staying at home. And then also, just generally, the world is really not trading. So WTO, the World Trade Organization, did say last week that, or the week before, I can't remember, that world trade was actually only going to grow by 1.5% this year, which is the lowest we've seen since 2008.
That's very slow.
Yeah, so it's not very exciting, unfortunately.
Okay. All right.
And then the reason the Rand strengthened, and this is an interesting one, is because for the second time this year, South African government issued dollar-denominated bonds. So we often talk about how, you know, the fixed income market, how the government and companies issue bonds and then we buy the bonds. And there was a big story with Future Growth a couple of weeks ago when they said they were not going to buy Eskom, Sanral, Land Bank and a whole bunch of others. They weren't going to support or buy these bonds. On Friday, the South African dollar denominated, there were two bonds, but they were 2.5 times oversubscribed. And what happens with these is that they actually go into an auction. So the bank phones up investors. In this case, on Friday, it was Barclays, HSBC, JP Morgan, and Nedbank. And they say, South Africa is issuing a dollar-denominated or two dollar-denominated bonds. Would you like to buy some? And where would you like to buy it? At what price? And the fixed income market generally put in their bids. The banks will give you a bit of guidance. And then it all happens behind closed doors. They run a spreadsheet to see where it is actually going to trade. Mm-hmm. And on Friday, it was the lowest level that South Africa has ever issued dollar-denominated bonds. So you'd think with all this worrying about being downgraded that the foreigners wouldn't want to buy our bonds, but apparently not. Apparently they do want to buy our bonds.
Well, do you want to hear the president talking about being downgraded and all the rest? Maybe you want to hear. Oh, exactly.
He's
talking about the rating agencies downgrading. Let's hear if he understands what he's talking about.
Compatriots.
By the way, it's bad when you start with a laugh, but let's listen.
We're doing well in our country currently in promoting cooperation between government and business. This positive collaboration also needs to include the promotion of transformation. It must go beyond reigniting growth and staving off a ratings downgrade.
Of course, he's lying, and he throws he throws transformation in there because that's the red herring. That's the thing that attracts all the craziness. And then he can say, if transformation's on the agenda, then that'll pacify poor black people who think that that means them. But he doesn't mean them. He's not talking about them. Hang on, there's more. What's he saying there, Mavs?
There's a young child who was meant to deliver a poem.
Okay.
Ute, Please
don't make me translate deep Zulu, because you know I'm so to my guy. Like, don't do this to me. The Zulu speaking people will have me on a stake.
What did you say?
What did you say? That's the president. All right, hang on.
Capital flight.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah. Capital flight. No, there's something.
Okay, that's about all I got here from the president. I don't know what he's talking about there towards the end.
You know, there's this big drama at the moment with him not signing the FIC bill.
What's the FIC bill? Oh my God, the FIC bill? What's that?
So when you go to the, you know, FICA and RICA, when you go to the bank, you have to say to them, you have to answer all these questions, you have to give them your proof of address, ID, blah, blah, blah. You have to tell them. And I'm not sure if the bank asks, but I know in my mandate, it says, are you a politically exposed person? And then because if you say yes, then basically I have to say to kind of the powers in the FSB that, yes, I'm dealing with somebody who is politically exposed and potentially could be receiving money on the side. And if he signs this bill, it means that he, as the president and all his cronies or friends, they have to kind of sign special documentation saying that they're politically exposed, and they will, SARS will actually look into them more carefully than they would any other ordinary person.
Oh, well, then obviously that's why he won't sign it.
There you go.
Yeah. Oh, okay.
It is generally considered good global practice to do that anyway. Everybody, every country does that. So we need that bill, but he's staying away from it.
All right.
Okay, and then I want to talk about that risk analyzer that I sent to you guys. So Ben came back in 84, which was quite high, I thought. But Michael
but
Flax...
Sorry, did you not notice this thing is constantly forcing you to upgrade your thing? It forces you to, like, be more adventurous. I was quite happy with the return that I sought. And then it's like, but what about this? But what about this?
It just wants to make sure. And that's why I'm sending it around now.
It has a real intention.
I felt
intention.
Like it was pressuring me, and I felt uncomfortable.
What, to upgrade your risk?
It kept telling me to upgrade my risk.
Oh.
All right. But you were saying, so 80-something, how much 80?
But it doesn't only 84. Do that. It actually looks at your age as well and says, what are you saving for? So if it's just discretionary money, it assumes that you've got a retirement fund. If it's retirement, it will lower your risk score if you're closer to retirement. So it's not just as simple as, well, do you want to save more or do you want to take more risk?
Okay, so Ben's in 84.
We'll work on that then. But Michael Flax replied to me last week and said he'd come across a stumbling block because when it asked him how much he wanted to save, he said the risk calculator wouldn't accept zero. So
you didn't want to save anything?
Not I didn't want to, I couldn't.
But that's exactly the point, right? Yeah. Mike's like, he's like all of us. We all go, oh no, I can't really afford to save. And so I want to give you a little example that I used in a presentation the other day. In 2002, if you had bought 50 liters of petrol, 2.5 kilograms of maize meal, and I couldn't find the price of pizza in 2004, Mike, so just bear with me here, 750 grams of instant Rick coffee, 125 grams of crisps, 6 cans of Coca-Cola, 24 cans of Castle Lager, it would have cost you 258 rand.
For all of that?
Yeah.
Which year?
2002.
Okay.
14 years ago, right?
Okay.
258 rand. Today.
No.
No? Mubs looks nervous.
I'm terrified.
Today it would be 1,000 rand.
Yep. 1,128 rand.
Oh, my goodness.
So you'd be out of pocket by 870 rand.
And whatever you don't save now, you lose in the future. Even if you have 100 rand, and this is the point, even for the poorest person, if you have 100 rand and you save 10 out of that 100 rand, you have a better chance than someone who is a millionaire in 10 years from now.
Absolutely. So if you had taken that 258 rand and put it in the JSE, you would have today over 2,000 rand, including dividends. So you would have outstripped inflation, basically. So that's good news, right? Now, I know we don't often do this, kind of pick only one share, and we're not going to have only one share on our portfolio. But if in 2002 you had bought ShopRite shares for 258 Rand, that's how much it was. And I'm using ShopRite because those things are all the things you can buy at ShopRite, I think.
Mm-hmm.
Any guesses? So if you'd invested in the JSE, 2,000 Rand in ShopRite shares alone, 7,560 Rand.
Yeah.
Okay.
So start
for all of
saving.
You who think you can't afford to save or invest,
yeah,
we are That's, wrong.
You're wrong.
We
you are wrong. Horribly wrong. Yeah. I'm equally bad.
You can't
bad.
Afford not to, yeah. actually.
There you go. And that's all I want to say for today.
Right. Cool. Thank you, Anthea. This is CliffCentral.com.